You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. Today, joining me, because he has written many things about the Pacers recently, many very good things about the Pacers that all need to be dug into more, Greg Doyle from the Indianapolis Star. First of all, Greg, how are you doing? How are you enjoying the Pacers offseason with the Colts right around the corner?
I'm enjoying it fine, Tony. I appreciate being on. I'm not sure how excited I am about you digging into anything I've written, because, I mean, if Pacers, if this were a math, I know the Pacers and I know the NBA, you know, at a pretty good level, like, you know, calculus kind of level, I think. But you're over there like splitting atoms and trigonometry. I mean, you're doing all kinds of, like, you're teaching the class. So let's not dig in too deep, shall we?
Well, the articles were all really good. That's why I wanted to do that. And of course, this can also be a walking advert here where I can say they are worth the subscription to the Indianapolis Star alone, everybody. So if you are not an Indy Star subscriber, I'd highly recommend you do that so you can read all the things we're about to talk about.
I'm not gonna ask you if you subscribe, but I will tell you that I get people on Twitter. I'll tweet out, you know, one of my stories or maybe somebody else's story that happens to be behind our paywall, and folks will respond with behind paywall. Like, duh, I know that. Today someone responded with to one of my tweets about a colleague's story. He responded, "I can't access it." And I responded back, "Sure you can. You just don't want to." And he responded back with, "Well, you got me there." So yep. Anyway, it is a business. I realize that Starbucks didn't spend their first 20 years giving away coffee, so confusing the whole world. But you wouldn't go into Starbucks now that you know they're charging and ask for free stuff. So don't come into my Twitter thing and ask for free stuff, nor don't ask for coffee, because I'm not doing either.
Well, the first one we're talking about is for subscribers. So I would be outed as a fraud immediately if I was not actually an IndyStar subscriber.
Yay!
So there we go. I have the proof in the pudding here. The title, Greg Doyle throwing punches in the title, calling the Pacers prehistoric. And that is correct, because the two-center approach the Pacers have taken to the NBA and to basketball the last couple of seasons is beyond Oladipo stuff recently, but prior to that was literally the most highly discussed Pacers thing on every talk show, newspaper, article, you name it, was, is this going to work? Is this the right decision? And I think this season was pretty interesting because the team was good and those two guys played pretty well together, but a lot of what Kevin Pritchard said about his next coach and the team's path forward and things like that suggest that they're kind of looking for a more modern approach. And that kind of contradicts what they have been doing and what the contracts of Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis suggests they might do going forward. So, but my lowball question to you to start off is, what do you think of the prehistoric Pacers on their path forward? Do you think the two-center pairing is the right move for next year?
They are going to trade Miles Turner.
That is your first sentence in one of your other articles. So
I just think they're going to listen, you know, in a vacuum, which we don't live, but in a vacuum, what the Pacers tried to do this year is the dumbest thing on earth in a vacuum. Cause in a vacuum, what you don't do when the league is going small is decide not us, we're going to go big, but we're not living in a vacuum. We have there are a bunch of facts that led us to this point. The biggest one being Paul George is a piece of garbage. Forced his way out of here, and the Pacers got a decent trade out of it and got Sabonis. And now they've got two of their best three or four players that happen to be 6'11". Well, what do you do? Well, if you're the Pacers and you can't exactly go out and get a Paul George-type player in the free agency market, you say, damn, these are pretty good players. We can't do better than this. Let's see if this works. So I understand why they felt like they had to try it. And now that we've seen – and we don't – honestly, Tony, we don't know, and I know you know this, because, again, I'm talking calculus and you're talking whatever is above calculus. But they didn't get enough minutes or games together for us to even know it didn't work. Like, we don't know it didn't work, but we can all kind of assume it probably wasn't going to work. And so can we please do something else? But we still don't know it didn't work. There's no evidence. Either way.
My two follow-ups would be, one is to the don't work point, I wanted to see them very badly in the playoffs this year, because then if they were better with the Sabonis only units or better with the Turner only units combined with the season, I think you could say, you know, right? Oh, this doesn't work in the playoffs. Why the hell are they even doing this? They're clearly trying to be good right now. The other point I want to bring up is Sabonis, you know, almost wins Sixth Man of the Year 2 years ago. And KP says in his media session postseason, I have to get this guy more minutes. We talked about giving him a bigger role. And I think that's the moment where even if they did want to move Turner at that point, they had to put them both together because there's no other option. You can't they're not going to bench Turner. They just gave him an extension that year, right? It was time. They were kind of forced to do both together, even if, like you're saying, they can't get anyone better, sure. And the way the timing lined up, Sabonis' growth lined up, they had to try. But I think you were right in that, and I think everybody knows this now, is that as good as it kind of was, you know, they won a bunch of games. It was the best season they've had in the McMillan era, or they did have in the McMillan era. It wasn't good enough to win a playoff series or get you to that echelon that they want to be, given that, you know, they just went out and signed some high caliber players. So I do agree that the prehistoric Pacers no longer need to be the prehistoric Pacers.
Among the things that when I said we don't live in a vacuum, you know, there's a bunch of facts that got us here. And one of those facts is Sabonis forced his way in the starting lineup. And I'm not sure he was wrong to do that, but I remember that press conference you're talking about when Pritchard, and I think Nate McMillan said it even more strongly. I believe it was in the season preview press conference, the preseason press conference, whatever, where he pretty much said, or maybe it was last year, the preseason press conference, when he said he wants to start. He knows he's a starter, and we're going to start him. I took that to mean we got to start Sabonis, or he's going to force his way out of here. So they had no choice. And I do want to apologize for something I said earlier. I called Paul George a piece of garbage. I meant that purely in the basketball teammate. I really did. I meant that as a basketball teammate, as a member of your franchise, he's garbage. In that he is a franchise killing, you know, his self. I mean, I'm not apologizing very much, am I? But he's a selfish guy. He's all about himself. He's just unbelievably bad in those areas, but he's not a criminal. You know, it, like I always talk about, like, he's so-and-so's a bad guy. So-and-so's a bad guy, non-criminal division, because criminals are all bad guys. And then there's guys that are not criminals, but they're just like, you don't like him on your team. Paul George is what, that's what I meant about him. So that's probably the worst apology ever, but that's what I'm saying.
If you're comparing him to the auras of other sports figures, right? Because when I like something I always feel like happens that I hate is when I say like, this NBA player is bad. And then someone will reply and be like, he's in the NBA. I'm like, well, duh, I'm comparing him to NBA players, not to like you and I, or else I wouldn't be saying he's bad.
I know, but the only reason I said that apology is the moment it came out of my mouth, I thought, oh my gosh, I can see someone going on Twitter and, you know, quote tweeting Greg Doyle, colon, Paul George is whatever. And they still can do that if they want, but I know that I came back and said, as a human being, he's not a piece of garbage human being. He's just – if he's your franchise player, that's garbage, because unless you're in LA, he'll happily be your franchise player in LA, but in Indianapolis, it just wasn't going to work. But yeah, you're right. People, they don't like, they can't assume, they don't assume that we're as smart as we are. And it doesn't take much brains to say, yes, I realize that Wilson Chandler's in the NBA. He's just a bad NBA player.
Right.
I realize he's better than I am, but sometimes you got to say that for people.
This might be the most outrageous timing ever. I don't know if you know this yet. Wilson Chandler signed with a team in China today, so he's no longer an NBA player.
Actually. Well, I was casting about for like who's a bad guy. I mean, a bad player. Like who's, and he's not a bad player, but I was just trying to think like who's a really bad player. And I was thinking like Spencer Dinwiddie, but no, he emerged as a really good player.
Yeah.
So I don't. You know, what I should have done. Obviously, I should have gone through old Pacers rosters. Solomon Hill. Corey Joseph flashed. Yeah, he's a pro. He's fine. Oh, who's that awful Tyreke Evans? There were people I could have mentioned as bad players. And Tyreke Evans is a bad player. He is the worst 20-point-a-game player I've ever seen. I've never seen a guy scoring 20 that's a worse basketball player than me. In fact, I'm not sure he is better than I am. When I say Tyreke Evans is bad, I'm not sure he is better than me. That's how bad he is. And I don't care if he scores 20 a game.
This is such a funny tangent. But the way – like Tyreke Evans – I thought that was like the perfect signing at the time. Like,
me
awesome.
Too.
Pressure off of Depot. Great score for the bench. This is perfect. And then he was terrible, right? Like you said, that makes me reevaluate literally every signing the Pacers make, because in the moment you go, awesome, they got Jeremy Lamb. He's going to fill in great for Depot and then fit in great with the bench. And I have to be like, wait a minute. Tyreke Evans was hot garbage. I need to stop and think maybe this guy won't be amazing.
Well, you know, the danger of – and I'm a positive, because you couldn't possibly watch less than me. I'm positive you watch a lot more NBA than I do. So I'm positive you saw Tyreke a little bit, but at the same time, there's no way you were studying him over the years, because one day I might be saying he's a good pickup for the Pacers. But when he signed, and I looked at his stats and saw that he'd done some things that were pretty remarkable statistically, I wrote, what you're talking about is what a great pickup for the Pacers, and holy cow, blah, 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 blah. But all it takes is one game. I mean, literally, you watch Tyreke Evans, at least in this city, for one game and watch him put his head down and go to the rim and not give a damn who's open, and you realize he doesn't fit here. Like, that's how a lot of NBA teams play, is there's five guys playing one-on-one, and at the end of the day, we'll see if our five games of one-on-one are better than your five games of one-on-one. The Pacers don't play that way, and it was never going to work. He was a ball hog and just didn't belong here. So let's talk more about Tyreke, because that's fun.
I would prefer we shift away from that, but I'm glad that I found something you're passionate about for future podcasts. We can do an entire show about Tyreke Evans.
Yes.
So my final thing I wrote for my notes about the prehistoric thing that is a big thing, and we're getting to this in our third article of Greg's we're talking about today. The coaching hire will have a big impact on this prehistoric stuff that you're mentioning. And, you know, obviously – I think it's good that you noted this, that Pritch said in the press conference, I've been wrong before, because that I think is going to come into play. And you made a fake interview in your article too, which is funny too. And this coaching hire is, he's going to ask every candidate, you know, probably the question will be phrased as, how can I make it work with, or how will you make it work with Turner and Sabonis? And the coach will say, I don't want to, or you shouldn't. But, you know, those dialogues will happen in the coaching hire. But I think that's going to be such an interesting dynamic and kind of maybe force their hand, which we'll talk about in a second, of, you know, every coach in the league that fits the bill that Pritchard said he wants for his next coach would not mesh with a two-center lineup at all. So I just cannot imagine him hiring a coach that wants to turn around and say, yep, this is the roster I want. So I think that the prehistoric era is over, just as the Nate McMillan era is over.
The one thing we don't know is, you know, what's going to happen when he has somebody sitting across from him who's never, like Darvin Ham, for example, who's never been a head coach. And until you've been a head coach, you're not a head coach. And so that first job is the hardest one to get.
Right.
And I wonder how many of them, knowing this is my shot, are going to be willing to say, yes, I do want you. If you hire me, it's going to require extra work because now I want you to blow up your franchise. And yeah, I wonder, and granted, they all want that. Like, nobody wants to play with two bigs. And Pritchard's got – I mean, Pritchard's smarter than I am. I mean, he is a smart – and, of course, that bar's not real high, but he's a smart guy. So he's going to know that these people don't really want to come out and blow up the roster that he put together. They don't want to, A, insult him, and, B, cause him to do more work in the future. So that will kind of – and we'll never know. I don't think we're ever – no matter what they say, we're never going to know the actual truth of when he says to Darvin Ham, what do I do about Miles Turner and Sabonis? There's no way Darvin Ham says, well, you got to trade Turner, yeah, or I'm not coming. I mean, Darvin Ham can't possibly say that. Now, right. If he's interviewing Mike D'Antoni, D'Antoni can say that. But Darvin Ham and other people like that, and I'm saving BH, those initials, for later, but they can't say that.
Hey, guys, we're going to take a short little break here to talk to you about the great people over at DoorDash, because you have counted on restaurants your whole life to provide you with food, entertainment, but now they are counting on you. While their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. I recently actually used DoorDash to get some Condado tacos for myself, one of my favorite downtown indie establishments that you can get on DoorDash. It's an app that brings you the food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering on there is super easy. They have a DoorDash app. You can go to their website, super easy. Your food will be safely left outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. It's super awesome. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, Australia, you can support your local go-tos from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, or you can get like Wendy's, Cheesecake Factory. Literally, almost anything you want will be on there. So right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA, all one word. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget that code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And that's why the coaching hire to me has to be the first step of the summer. I think that's obvious anyway, but some teams have gone in different orders in the past, looking at you, the Kings. So we'll see what exactly happens here. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how they move out of it. And that transitions us seamlessly. I love that. Into the next one you wrote about, which is tough decisions on Turner, Sabonis, and Oladipo. Although the Sabonis decision referenced here wasn't really that tough. And your first lead was something we already talked about, trading Turner. Now, that is done with the intent of playing Sabonis more often, getting one center on the court, getting out of this era. But you have to get a good return for him. And I have two questions for you about a potential center trade. I'm being careful with my words here. One, if you do trade a center on the Pacers, what do you, Greg Doyle, want in return? Two, I understand why you trade Turner, because Sabonis showed that he was better this year. But would you say that because Sabonis could get a better return, there is possibly merit to getting that better return and seeing how that fits with Turner?
Now, that's fascinating. I hadn't thought about that second part. That's really interesting.
Now, I'm not saying I think that way, but I've heard that line of thinking from people before, and it made me go, interesting.
Well, what's interesting about the trade of these two guys and is that Turner is so much better on defense than Sabonis is, so much more versatile, such a rim protector, all these things. We all know this. And Sabonis, not that he's a bad defender, but he doesn't do what Miles does, and Miles does something that at a premium high level. And so you kind of wonder, yes, Sabonis is going to score more than him without the threes. Yes, he's going to rebound a lot more than him. Yes, he's going to get more assists. But what is rim protection worth? Because it's not just 2.5 blocks a game. It's not just, well, that's 2.5 blocks. It's affecting and it actually just eliminating the possibility of so many shots that just aren't going to happen with Miles Turner on the court. So I'd rather watch Sabonis play. Frankly, Miles Turner is just so hard to watch. I mean, we all know that. He's just so hard to watch because when he's good, he's so much fun. It's fun to watch a 7-footer hit 3-pointers and block shots and scream. I mean, that is fun. And he's very good about every third game. But then 2 out of every 3 games, he's not. And it feels disappointing, whether it's fair or not to say that. And I don't want to keep ripping Miles Turner. He's such a nice human being. But I'm just kind of tired of the dance. Whereas Sabonis kind of gives you what he gives you. He's like Ivan Drago. He will break you. He's just going to go do that. So there's more consistency there. And it's less stress. Having said all that, if I'm trading either one of them, what I have to get back is a high-level wing. Maybe not an all-star, but you got to get back a score. What you can't do is get back a draft pick that might be the 14th pick next year. Well, that's where the Pacers are every year anyway, and that hadn't worked out. They've got to get somebody that they couldn't get in the draft, and so it's a wing, and not a Jeremy Lamb wing. I mean a borderline all-star wing, and Pritchard's good. He'll figure it out.
Yeah, I agree with you that it needs to be a wing or a bigger wing in general because that's the natural construction, right? We saw T.J. Warren at the 4 in the bubble, and then you go, holy shit, this dude against power forwards on the perimeter more is unbelievable. Justin Holiday, Aaron Holiday, whoever sliding in with that group still looked good. Let's go get the wing for this guy. Getting that value is Pritchard's job, not our job, but it's going to be – very hard. I'm all for that, though. Yeah, I think I agree with you on Miles being the guy you move for the reasons you described as well. And the troubling part for me as someone who watches the team and really scrutinizes / praises some of the things they do is, like, I can't have expectations because that would just, you know, that would lead to emotions in the game that I don't want. But with Miles, I think a lot of what makes him hard to evaluate for everybody is he has that game every 3 games that you're talking about where you're like, oh, damn, he just won them the game. He was so good. And then you reset your expectations for, okay, if Miles has that game, this game, they'll win. And then he doesn't. And then they lose. And you go, well, he did this and this bad and makes you walk it back. Where Sabonis has that game won in every 20 games. So that is all the better for Sabonis. And I agree that he should be the guy if they are forced to or thinking of trading one to keep. I think he can be modern, not because of his ability to shoot threes, but his ability to create them by posting up, by passing, stuff like that. But, yeah, a wing would be awesome just because – They need the wing defense for the playoffs. I think we saw that this year. I think the teams that are still left show that. I basically agree with everything you just say, so I'm not offering any actual great insight here. But
we're going to see if you agree with this one. This is you remember what I said earlier to you about how I apologize for the Paul George thing because I can see someone taking out those 4 words and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Well, I was on the – I believe it was Kent Sterling's show about 3 years ago, and – it was maybe 4 years ago, and Scott Agnes was the producer, and I said something rather controversial, and what I said was, you know, Kent said, what would you do to fix the Pacers? What would you do? And I said I'd trade Paul George, and this was before Paul George had made it clear he wanted to be traded. So this was in fact, this might have been shortly after that All Star series. I want to say it was Toronto, maybe Cleveland. Toronto, where he was Toronto, awesome,
yeah. Amazing, yeah,
he was amazing. And it might have been after that series when they said, what would you do? And I said, I'd trade Paul George. And Scott Agnes, recognizing, you know, content and good tweets when he hears one, pulled out those 5 words and tweeted it out. Doyle on Kent Sterling's show, I'd trade Paul George. And I immediately got unfollowed by 5,000 Pacers fans and then ripped by the rest of them. And it wasn't really fair, but I, you know, that's how it happened. So I'm about to say something just about as controversial as that, or at least suggest it. Just suggest it.
Okay.
If you're, because the Pacers are, they seem to be, based on what Kevin Pritchard told us in his postseason press conference, they want to go for it. He made it kind of clear that we're going to, you know, the trade market is where players, people are going to get better this offseason, because no, free agency is not going to be a lot of money thrown around. The draft isn't that good. You're going to see a lot of teams trading a lot of players. And I just got, and what we did this year, which was the seventh best league record in the whole league, fourth best record in the East, wasn't good enough. So it tells me they're going for it. Well, if you're going for it, and again, we're not in a vacuum. We're not in a vacuum. Where we are is they've got two bigs and you can't play two bigs. Where we are is Victor Oladipo has 1 year left on his contract and has been acting very much like someone who we're not sure it wants to come back here. At the very least, after the season was over, he was asked, might have been you. Was that you that asked
Kevin him? Bowen. It was Kevin Bowen.
It was KB, right.
Yep.
Asked him, you know, you got 1 year left on your contract. It was a softball. Like, you got 1 year left on your contract. Do you see yourself being here long term? Well, Victor wouldn't answer that. Just, in fact, what he said was, I'm not going to think about that right now. If that's not going off as a red alert in your head, Pacers fans, then you're not listening. So, given that we're not in a vacuum, given that somebody in the big has to go, given that Oladipo might walk in a year for nothing, what about packaging Turner and Oladipo for – I don't know if LaMelo Ball is that good. I've never seen him, so I'm not saying for him. But do you package those two guys for the number one pick in the draft and maybe something else? I mean, if you really go for it and you think you might lose Vic in a year, why – I mean, what do you think about that, Tony?
Yeah, I think that actually is something I've thought about before on the show. Adam, my co-host, brought it up one time of like those two for Chris Paul in some capacity, where Chris Paul's not like his contract is terrible. He's a million years old, that you need more than that back. But something like that, where you're using their combined salaries and combined asset value to get something amazing that really helps you go for it. Now, I think that has a lot of merit to it. Because, yeah, the things you said about Depot are obviously true, right? Even before he opted out without telling the team, which was the biggest red flag in the history of time, yes. Was I was already kind of dwindling away from – like, I was pretty confident. Everything he said his first two seasons here, right, and you can attest this too, felt like, dude, this dude loves it here. The Pacers finally got the small market star that every small market team wants. He loves it here. He's got ties to the state. This is awesome. Basically everything since the injury has been the opposite, where it's like, oh, damn, maybe he doesn't. So I've been kind of lowering my chance he stays meter all the time. And then at that moment of him opting out and still playing, but then the answer in this press conference, I'm below 50% now. So I think you have to try to extend him, because as a small market team, you can't get that level of guy, right? Even if there's a chance he returns to some of the form he's had before, you need to go for that. But if you even get a sniff in these negotiations that he doesn't want to stay, or some third agent of an agent or something says, oh, I heard this about a XYZ team, which y'all know who I'm talking about, but then yeah, you trade him, right? You have to. And if packaging Miles with him gets you the guy that, and I think you're right to say this, gets you the guy that puts you on the competitive path that Pritchard has stated you want to be on, and the amount of money you're spending shows that you're trying to be on, then, yeah, I think packaging them makes a ton of sense.
Do you think the Heat would trade Adebayo and Tyler Herro for Oladipo?
No, neither of them. They couldn't get either one of them.
Okay.
I think Herro has been killing it in the playoffs, and I think that cemented that he has more value than Vic. By the way, I have to give you a lot of credit, because I was for months saying the Pacers should try to play the Heat in the first round. It's their best matchup. And you tweeted that you thought that would be stupid because you think the Heat are a conference finals team. And I thought you were nuts. And we are possibly a few hours away from you being correct. So kudos to you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I don't know. Something about the Heat. Again, it's one of those things you got to see them in person, because you look, I mean, their record is one game behind the Pacers. And I don't know. I mean, on paper, their roster looks good. But it's in the playoffs, really, when you see Goran Dragic is a killer. And Tyler Herro is a killer. And Jimmy Butler is the biggest killer in the league. I mean, he's just unbelievable. I mean, minus he doesn't have LeBron's game. He doesn't have the game of some of the killers. He is the – I will tell you this. Jimmy Butler is the biggest overachiever in the NBA. He might be, because there's nothing about him that says he ought to be that good. He's not 5 feet above the rim. He's only – I say only, but he's only 6'7". He's not a great three-point shooter. Why is he so good? Because he's got bigger huevos than anybody. And – So, yeah, that team, the makeup of that team terrifies me. I remember seeing Bam Adebayo in college, and back then he was listed at 6'11". Of course, now he's listed at 6'9". He was at Kentucky. They called him – maybe they called him 6'10". They called him 6'10", 260. I remember that. Because I remember watching him play the first time. And like I've said to you 10 times now, it's different when you see somebody with your own two eyes. It's just different. And I saw Bam Adebayo in college, and I tweeted out, I've not seen a guy built like that move like this since Dwight Howard. And, of course, everybody killed me. And granted, Howard is a little bit bigger than him. But anyway, Adebayo's scary. That guy's scary. And I didn't even know he could dribble the ball like that. I just thought he was a scary athlete. And then you see him play, and you're like, damn, he's Sabonis-like. He's got all kinds of skills. So, yes, they're a very good team. I want to credit you for one thing real quick. You said on Twitter something that kind of helped shape the way I've written a few times about Miles Turner. You said, talking about Turner and Sabonis, and that you got to trade one, you got to trade Turner. And you went out of your way to say, he's a good player, I like him or whatever, but, you know, it's not about that. You can only have to – just saying you want to trade somebody doesn't mean they're not a good player. Something like that. And the way – do you remember that? Because the way you worded that, I need to start making my columns be more clear about this.
Well, people just – when you say something and people on Twitter assume you mean six things on top of the thing you said. And I think –
yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's – I think I go over the top with this, but I try to reply to everybody just – that's extremely ridiculous. I know it's social media, but just like to get the point across, to discuss what I'm trying to discuss. And what you're referring to is, just because I say I think Turner is good and better than most people who cover the Pacers, I think he's better than a lot of people who cover the team think he is, doesn't mean I think he should stay with the team. You know, I even wrote a long statistical analysis piece about him and Sabonis together. And I think it probably makes more sense now, especially given the playoffs, where we've now seen two different instances, right? Two big instances. One is Turner with the team without Sabonis in the bubble. And two is the bench unit with just Sabonis all season long, where they were really good with just one center. And I think that we have ample evidence to say that it's Sabonis is better. And we know that you have to move Turner. So just because I think he's really good does not also mean I think the team would not be better if they moved him. Can we go back to something you have written about and said earlier, or do you want to go down this train a little longer?
There's one more train I want to just mention real quickly.
Okay.
Is the most – you know, this team has it's got a handful of guys, you know what they are. Jeremy Lamb, you know what he is. Oladipo, actually, we don't know what he is because of the injury. But there's one guy that fascinates me because I don't know what he is yet. And I think the Pacers feel the same way, and that's Aaron Holiday. I don't know because I watch him play, and he'll have a lot of games where he's just nobody. So, but then he'll have some games where you're like, damn, that guy is – and no, he's not, as a little Isaiah Thomas, IT. He's not going to score 30 a game. He's not that guy. But he's a watered-down Isaiah Thomas. Like, Sabonis is a watered-down poor man's Nikola Jokic. He's not Jokic. There's no other body who plays like Jokic, but he's the next best thing. Aaron Holiday, when he's really good, reminds me of a watered-down Isaiah Thomas, which is fascinating. But anyway, what do you think of Aaron Holiday?
Yeah, I think he's good. The thing I wrote about with him this year is I think that the growth didn't reflect in his stats because of a couple things. One is he played 6,000 roles for the Pacers this year, which is not something you expect if you're a rookie, right? Backup point guard, backup shooting guard, starting point guard. And the Pacers season, and Scott Agnes has said this perfectly, it's a season defined by injuries. A lot happened differently that will now be plots of the next season. But this past season, injuries were such a big part that Aaron Holiday played so many roles. So while his stats, you look at him, you go, oh, he doesn't look that much better than year one. Well, I think he learned to show more than he did in year one. Two, early in the season, I actually killed the Pacers for this. They just benched him completely. He was terrible. He missed his first like 20 shots of the season or something.
Right.
They just totally benched him for McConnell. And I think that kind of, I don't know what the right word is, but I think it made him assess and go, you know, really? Yeah, I'm better than this guy. And what am I doing wrong? What do I need to do to play? And again, there were a bunch of injuries, so he got to play. But in those moments, I think after that, and I've talked about this on this show a lot, is he looked like he figured out the balance of passing and scoring more after that point, because he just come in and chuck those first four games, and it was terrible for him and the team. Then, he had a really good game against the Nets in mid-November, I remember, where he would come down into the lane, and he'd kind of have a good shot, and he'd pass the corner for the good shot in the corner. It's like that kind of stuff is so simple, but he didn't really have it until this year. So I think he's getting better and showing that he can be a rotation caliber sixth man kind of guard. But, yeah, I think the question the Pacers still are asking, because they haven't had a chance to give him significant playing time or a significant role, is how good can he be? And I was lower on him as a pick in general. I think he can be a starter level player, but they have to figure out quickly if he can be a starter level guy or if he's just a bench guard, because he's their most important young guy. He's the only youngster who's really showed he can be something awesome. So he's got a they're running out of time to see what they got with him.
I like him as a bench guard. That's what I like him best as. If he's your second unit point guard, because your second unit point guard has to be able to fill it up. He better score. And I mean, he's
a hero right now.
Right. I mean, he's a bucket getter. He needs. So I can see him being a really good second unit point guard at his best. One more thing I'll say about Aaron Holiday, and then I know you wanted to move on to the last topic. First time I saw Aaron Holiday in person, like literally next to him on the court for media day. And then, of course, now I look for it every time I see him on TV, and I still see it. He's got the biggest shoulders of a guy 6 foot tall I've ever seen. Have you noticed that?
6'7" wingspan. He's a stocky, fast kid. It's kind of – his build's kind of weird. Like, I don't mean that in a critical way. I don't know if I've seen someone shorter than me who has – like that long of arms and shoulders.
And they're huge arms. Like I'm in NFL locker room too, at least I was before COVID. He's got like an NFL safety's arms. I mean, he's just a big, big, scary, physically muscular, imposing guy, but he's only 6 feet tall. And he's got that little smile about him. So he kind of looks harmless and yet no. So that's the expert analysis you get from me is you got to talk about a cute smile and no.
Well, I think with point guards, it takes the longest in the NBA for them to develop. So, a year or two, he's good enough that they have the time kind of to give him a leash, if that makes sense. I did air quotes around time. They don't really have, you never have time in the NBA, but you know, they can go, okay, you got better at this year. Okay, go do this now. And by the end of his rookie deal, I'm sure they'll know what he is.
Know the deal by now. It wouldn't be a Locked On Pacers episode without me telling you about the lovely, terrific people over at Built Bar, because Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar out there. They're 100% covered in chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew, and they sent me a pack of their 12 original flavors. And let me tell you, they are delicious. You know, I really like the raspberry one. My favorite was the mint brownie one. My girlfriend really liked the double chocolate one and the peanut butter one. They honestly were all really good, though. Now they have 6 new flavors that I'm looking forward to try. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream among them. They're great for losing and maintaining weight. They're delicious. They're low calorie, but they're high fiber and high protein. They're low sugar. If you're on a keto diet, for example, they're great for something like that. And best of all, if you go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, you'll get $10 off your next order with that promo code. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
Yes, the last thing, you referenced it earlier by saying BH. And on the show, we've talked about her. Becky Hammon. I said her. Greg, I'm going to say something before we do this. Every time I talk about the next coach for the team, I say, Pritchard wants him to do this, or he needs to do this. And I keep going, damn it, you know, because there's this, like, all the sports betting sites, this doesn't matter at all for what the Pacers are going to do, but that lists, like, the most likely next Pacers coaches. Becky Hammon's, like, top 10 in all of them. It's, like, she's clearly a great candidate for an NBA coaching job. And I keep saying he and him, and I'm like, damn it, Tony, like, think, you know she's – anyway – you wrote a great piece about her, perfect headline for the type of story that it is and the type of reason we're having this discussion. And I want to get to the crux of it eventually. But, yeah, this girl from South Dakota, 6-time WNBA All-Star, hired by Popovich in 2014, killer assistant coach. Pau Gasol loves her. Popovich loves her. And yet you barely hear her name. It's like she's really good. And I think you just did all the research into her. What do you think of her as a potential NBA head coach?
Well, I'm going to tell you something that I didn't write in that story because I don't quite know this, and so I just know it well enough to say it on your podcast. How about that? But
okay. But
I've heard this from a few people, not one, so I guess two. I've heard this from two different people. Is that there's something about her that maybe San Antonio wouldn't mind if she were to go, and what I can't tell, and again I've heard that from two different people. What I can't tell is that a smokescreen? Is that the Spurs wanting her to replace Popovich, but they know that her time is coming, and so they're trying to put out some almost misinformation so the teams kind of cool down because they know that if you get her in your locker room and interview her, you're going to hire her. So I don't know if that's a smokescreen coming from San Antonio or if that's legit that maybe she has a little bit of a Jim Harbaugh to her where she's kind of wears you out. And I've never met her, so I have no idea. But there is something out there floating around about – what do the Spurs really think about her, and is it real? Having said all that, it appears unless all these NBA teams, unless everybody is just being politically correct and just being fake and hiring, like there's 10 or 11 women in the league right now on staffs.
Yep.
Unless all of that is just one big ruse to look more socially aware than you really are. Unless that's the case, we're going to have a head coach someday that's a woman. And if that's the case, and that's where I think of the two, I think it's more likely that, no, this is legitimate. This is sincere. Women are being tapped because they bring something different for the locker room and all that. So their presence in the league is sincere. Given that, then one of them's going to be a coach someday. And given that, Becky's the one. And it's just a matter of time. And the question is, which franchise has the guts, really? The guts and almost the, the hell with it. What do we have to lose? You know, because it's a risk. It's, I mean, obviously, it'll be the most riskiest. It'll be the riskiest hire in NBA history, just about. Maybe Jerry Tarkanian by the Spurs.
And probably the most scrutinized coach, no matter what happens, of all time.
Oh, of all time. So, do you want to deal with that? Do you want to be the franchise that deals with that? And some franchises might, like, yeah, we'd like that attention. And maybe the Pacers are that franchise. Maybe, you know, we'd like to be on ESPN.
Aaron Kelly last year. Literally.
Exactly right. They've got the first assistant GM in Kelly. They actually hired, of course, different people, but they gave Ann Myers a contract, and they gave her $50,000, 25, 34, whenever that was, to play, and she'd make the team, but they gave her money. And Nancy Leonard, Slick's wife, was the de facto GM in the 70s when they became an NBA team for the first time. I mean, this is the same franchise that did all these things, and so they're the logical one to hire Becky Hammon. Now, having said all that, you know, you've got to be really good in the interview, and I have no idea how she'll interview. One thing about Ron Rivera over the years, that Ron Rivera, I heard for years before he became head coach, he was always like, when is Ron Rivera going to be a head coach? And everybody would tell you behind closed doors, he's a terrible interview. He's a terrible interview. And he finally got hired, and the Panthers did pretty well, and then he got fired. But he got hired again by the Redskins. We'll see what happens. So Becky Hammon has to be a good interview. But if she's a good interview, someone's going to hire her. And I think, why not the Pacers? I mean, really, why not? You're rolling the dice on somebody. You're not going to hire a retread, I hope. So whoever you hire, there's no track record. Darvin Ham, as I said a million times, I mean, why not him? But if you're going to roll the dice, go for broke. Let's roll for a seven. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think she really would do a good job. I talked about the Popovich coaching tree last week, and I think it's a really interesting thing because sometimes you get Budenholzer, really good, Kenny Atkinson, really good. Right, Ime Udoka, he's an assistant for the Sixers, widely regarded in the same mold as Hammond. But from the pop tree, going to be really good. Then you get your Jim Boylans and your Borregos, and you're like, oh, damn, you know, maybe not as good. But I think the pop tree's had enough successes, you can look at her and go, okay, great, she's learned from someone awesome. And the thing I've heard, to the opposite point, actually, of something you said earlier, is that, well, actually, probably to the same point, to the smokescreen point you said, is, yeah, that the whisper I've heard is that's what they want. Pop's gone, Hammond's in charge. There we go. It's that easy, smooth transition, which could make it hard for other teams to interview her, too, if they know that. But anyway, I think something that makes her a great fit is something you actually mentioned in the article, and something that matches up with something. Dan Craig is the first guy that we've heard the Pacers are sourced to be interviewing. He's a 38-year-old assistant for the Heat. I called out his age on purpose because Pritch said in his postseason presser two things that he wants his coach to do: communicate really well with his players and be a modern coach. And I think those two things together mean they're going to be a younger person, unless it's like the top guy like D'Antoni, who's really good. That's what you're getting because – you know, he talked to David West for a reason. David West is younger and understands the NBA player. I think some of the younger coaches who are more in tune with technology, things like that, would be better for these players. And Becky Hammond's 43. She has coached, again, for the Spurs for a long time, has playing experience. I think she checks a lot of the boxes that Kevin Pritchard wants in his next coach. And that's why I think she would be a great candidate, even beyond her, you know, her ties to Pop and her resume. I think that she just checks boxes that would make her a good fit.
Yeah, the way the modern NBA player, and this has been happening for years, they didn't become rich overnight, but the more money they make, the more power they realize they have. And I tell you what, what happened with the bubble, George Hill doesn't get enough credit because I'm pretty sure George Hill stood the world on its head. I think George Hill is the reason the Bucks were going to boycott that game. And because the Bucks boycotted, every team boycotted. And because that happened, baseball boycotted, and I mean,
hockey.
It happened all.
Yeah.
Right, hockey. I mean, I'm telling you, I think George Hill did all of it. At least he was the first domino. Without George Hill, none of it happens. So, but point is, players, they know how much power they have, and they're becoming, the NBA, they're becoming more like soccer players, international. Because international soccer players, they're, for years they've been this way. They're players, they're athletes, they get paid more than anybody else. But they also, they're fashion icons, and they're models,
right,
and they're, you know, they're pop culture superstars beyond the field. And the NBA players have become that in the last, like, 2 years maybe. And Russell Westbrook gets a lot of credit for that, for his walk-ins. But anyway, they're just not what they used to be in almost any way, including the ego and how much power – I mean, the salary, nothing. Which is why Mike D'Antoni was never going to work here. That was never going to work here, and I'm glad that the Rockets, you know, have survived, and now he's indispensable, and he's going to stay with the Rockets. Because that was just not going to work, and I didn't think it was even going to happen. So we can just stop
calling it before it happens, huh?
Well, we can just stop talking about it now because it's not going to happen. But I just never thought it was going to happen anyway. So I'm just glad that we can move on and give Becky Hammon and people like that more attention, because that's where the future of the NBA is. And the Pacers are trying to go into the future, or at least in the present tense. And what better way to do that than to hire that 38-year-old kid from Miami, yeah, whoever he is, or Becky Hammon.
Yeah, and Hammond's great. And I think the last point I want to touch on from your article, and that was great, is like the flip side happens all the time. We see it with UConn right now. Gino Auriemma, a man coaching women and doing a fantastic job. And why can't the flip side happen, right? Muffin McGraw, someone you talked to who had offers for, what did you say, a middle-level D1 program or something like that for men's. And
yes.
Pat Summitt, same thing at Tennessee. It's like, why can't this happen? We see the flip side happening now. Why would the opposite be just so weird and impossible for the players to deal with? I always thought that point was kind of ridiculous, and I thought you articulated it very well.
Yeah, and thank you. And getting Muffet on the phone was – I mean, I was so happy that and lucky that she would call back and to talk about this. But Gino – I put a message into Gino and got nothing. Like, not even no thanks. I mean, just nothing. His PR staff, nothing. And so you kind of learn about people at times like that. Like it's real easy to be king of the world, but you're the king of the world in a women's sport. But how about you talk about the vice versa, Gino? You've got perspective no one else has. Wouldn't even talk about it. So this has nothing to do with anything, but Gino goes down in my book for that reason. But yeah, if it's okay for the best coaches of women's sports to be men, and Anson Dorrance is the best coach in women's soccer history, and Gino is clearly – well, shoot, Pat Summitt too. The two best coaches in women's basketball history, and one of them's a man. So if that can work that way, it stands to reason that the opposite could work too. Not that Becky Hammon would be the next John Wooden, but that she can get it done.
Yeah, I agree. I think she'd be really good. I really, really enjoyed that piece. I'm glad there was a profile on her as a candidate in general, just so more people figure out who she is and investigate her as a candidate. Greg.
By the way, she's going to interview. I am positive she's going to interview. And I don't say that coming from – I promise. No one's told me that. I'm not – if someone had told me that, I'd be telling you, hey, guess what, Tony? I got sources telling me. I don't know that. But I know for a fact that she's on their list. They are making calls. I know that for a fact. But that's – I mean, of course she's on their list. She's on everybody's list.
Right.
But I know for a fact they're making calls about her. And so I suspect that – given the fact they're making calls, given the fact, let's be honest, I wrote the story I wrote, and not because I wrote it, but because Pacers fans went nuts. I mean, they went nuts over that story, and the Pacers have to know that. So I don't think they can afford not to interview her. So right. I suspect she'll be brought into town, if for no other reason than if you don't interview her after the way Pacers fans took to that story, you're going to have some, you know, people are going to be upset. So I think she's going to have to get a shot.
Well, everybody go read that story, by the way, because we've brought it up so many times now, and all of Greg's stories in the Star. But Greg, I took up way more of your time than I told you I would. So I normally ask people here, is there anything you want to talk about the Pacers? So if you want to talk about something about the team, let's do that. But if not, I feel like I owe you 12 minutes somewhere. So might as well start now.
No, I mean, I brought up Aaron Holiday's shoulders. I brought up Tyreek Evans being a ball hog. Trying to think.
I did not expect to go to either of those places today. So there we go.
Yeah, is there anywhere else I can go that I didn't think we'd go? Well, can we – one more thing, just real quick, and then this is just low-hanging fruit, and I don't even know why I feel the need to say this, but TJ Leaf, why
– Yes.
Nice kid. I mean, you know, it's one of these bless-your-heart kind of things, but why is he still here?
They picked up his third-year option because they thought they could make him improve. And then the fourth-year option, I would have a lot to explain to you on one show about the salary cap, but there was basically no reason not to keep him, or at least that was the thought at the time, but then this pandemic thing happened. I don't know if you've heard about it. And that that really impacted the salary cap in a way that they probably should have declined his team option for this year. But you can't predict a pandemic at the time of picking up a player's option. So that is most of the gist of why he will be on the payroll next year. I know I'm not going to say he'll be on the team next year, but I'm confident that he will be on the payroll next year.
Well, he's a nice guy, and you can't have too many TJs. If there's a TJ in the league, yes, the Pacers need to get him, so why not?
Yeah, well, maybe he's one of these guys like Brogdon last summer. I hope you remember that he said this. He said, someone asked him, who's been popping for you? This is at the golf outing. He said, who's popped to you in the Pacers scrimmages? He was like, TJ Leaf. And I was like, sweet. Okay. They picked up this guy's option. He's going to jump out in year three. And he didn't, but maybe he's just an awesome scrimmage practice buddy. And that guy has some value, I guess.
I think he is that. And I think I described I forget who I was writing about, and I know we got to go, but I described somebody as a 4A player. And I brought up Russ Moorman, who played baseball for the Florida Marlins when I covered them 20 years ago. Every time he went to AAA, he hit 380. The Marlins would call him up and hit 210. He'd go back to AAA and he'd win the Triple Crown. The Marlins would call him up and he'd hit 140. And there's just some guys that are they're so good, they're too good for AAA. But for whatever reason, it must be mentally, the comfort level, the confidence, whatever. It's just not there at the highest level. I think that's TJ Leaf. I think that's probably why he's a great practice player. It's why he's great in scrimmages. It's why his G League numbers, whenever he plays, he goes down there, he dominates.
25 a game, yeah.
Yeah, I just think there's something about him. He's a 4A player. He's too good for anything but the NBA, but for whatever reason, just can't unlock it for the NBA, and that's a shame, but that's where he is.
I love that. I need to use that analysis myself because I feel bad like when I talk about him sometimes because I'm just like, what are you doing? So – at least now I have words to put in. Well, Greg, thank you very much for coming on and talking about all of the lovely stuff you've written about the team recently and, of course, to me about the Pacers. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate being asked, Tony. It really does mean a lot. Thank you for this.
Greg is on Twitter at Greg Doyle Star, though I would be stunned if you do not follow him and you follow me. So go fix that if that is the case. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will be back tomorrow.